All right, so before we start out in chapter 5 this morning, as usual, I want to go back and just read a few verses, recapping last week, because it kind of runs into this week anyway. So it kind of brings a sense of cohesion to this book. So instead of seeing it as broken up into groups of stories or accounts, I think doing this helps to keep the flow intact, building upon each other, leading into this next section. So let's start this morning by reading the account of Jesus and his disciples as they crossed the Sea of Galilee after ministering to the multitudes. So starting in chapter 4, verse 33, and we'll go ahead and read through what we're going to look at today, which is verses 20 through chapter 5. So starting chapter 4, verse 33. And with many such parables, he spoke the word to them as they were able to hear it. But without a parable, he did not speak to them. And when they were alone, he explained all these things to his disciples. On the same day, when evening had come, he said to them, "Let us cross over to the other side." Now when they had left the multitude, they took him along in the boat as he was, and other little boats were also with him. And a great windstorm arose, and the waves beat into the boat, so that it was already filling. But he was in the stern, asleep on a pillow. And they awoke him and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" Then he arose and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Peace, be still." And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. But he said to them, "Why are you so fearful? How is it you have no faith?" And they feared exceedingly and said to one another, "Who can this be, that even the wind and the sea obey him?" Then they came to the other side of the sea, to the country of the Gadarenes. And when he had come out of the boat, immediately there met him, out of the tombs, a man with an unclean spirit, who had his dwelling among the tombs, and no one could bind him, not even with chains. Because he had often been bound with shackles and chains, and the chains had been pulled apart by him, and the shackles broken in pieces, neither could any one tame him. And always, night and day, he was in the mountains, and in the tombs, crying out and cutting himself with stones. When he saw Jesus from afar, he ran and worshipped him. And he cried out with a loud voice and said, "What have I to do with you, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I implore you, by God, that you do not torment me." For he said to him, "Come out of the man, unclean spirit." Then he asked him, "What is your name?" And he answered, saying, "My name is Legion, for we are many." Also he begged him earnestly that he would not send him out of the country. Now a large herd of swine was feeding there near the mountains. So all the demons begged him, saying, "Send us to the swine that we may enter them." And at once Jesus gave them permission. Then the unclean spirits went out and entered the swine. There were about 2,000. And the herd ran violently down a steep place into the sea and drowned in the sea. So those who fed the swine fled, and they told it in the city and in the country. And they went out to see what it was that had happened. Then they came to Jesus and saw the one who had been demon-possessed and had the legion, sitting and clothed in his right mind, and they were afraid. And those who saw it told him how it happened to him who had been demon-possessed and about the swine. Then they began to plead with him to depart from their region. And we got into the boat. He who had been demon-possessed begged him that he might be with him. However, Jesus did not permit him, but said to him, "Go home to your friends and tell them what great things the Lord has done for you and how he has had compassion on you." And he departed and began to proclaim it in Decapolis, and all that Jesus had done for him, and all marveled. So something that stood out to me on my first reading of this passage is the effect of Jesus traveling to the other shore. Here he was teaching the multitudes of people that were gathered around and who were amazed at his teaching and miracles and all that he was doing. But yet he tells his disciples that he wanted to take a boat to the other side of the sea. And we see that when they arrive, he is not met by these massive multitudes of people. Rather, he arrives quietly and unannounced, and he has an encounter with this demon-possessed man. After which, after the request by the fearful response of the local people, he and his disciples return to their boats and go back to where they came from. So did you notice the same thing that I did here on this first read-through? Jesus traveled across the sea through a storm to get to this man on the other side of the sea, And then he leaves again, back to where he came from. I think this is a perfect picture of God's sovereign grace being showed towards this one man. And this aligns perfectly with Jesus calling Levi to follow him in chapter 2. So let us read that real quick to keep this thought in our mind. Chapter 2, starting in verse 13. He said, "Then he went out again by the sea, and all the multitudes came with him, and he taught them. As he passed by, he saw Levi, the son of Alphaeus, sitting at the tax office, and he said to him, 'Follow me.' So he arose and followed him." Do you see the similarities here? Jesus singled out both of these men. He did not focus on the multitudes that were following him, but on these individuals. He left the multitudes on the shoreline to travel across the sea to get to this demon-possessed man. And here in the account in chapter 2, he had the multitudes following him, but yet he calls over to a tax collector, specifically telling him to follow him. There is a purpose and there is a meaning behind everything that Jesus does. And just as we see in this account here with the demoniac and with Levi, Jesus does not ask permission. He does not timidly invite, but instead he commands. And with that command comes the willingness and the ability to follow. I am sure Levi, just like all of the other disciples, had heard of Jesus and of the multitudes that were gathered around him. But they went about their own daily business. Even with Jesus and the multitudes following close behind by the tax office, Levi was sitting there, probably doing his job, until Jesus called to him, to which he left his job and everything behind to follow, just as the fishermen did. He did not plead. He did not beg. He did not even ask. Jesus effectively called these men to follow him. He picked them specifically out of this crowd of people, and he told them to follow me. And now we see something along the exact same lines here in chapter 5. None of these people were seeking out Jesus, but rather he sought them out. The mention here of the location that Jesus and the disciples had gone to is an interesting one. Scholars have debated as to which city this meeting of the demoniac happened at. This area across the sea, which is known as the Decapolis, which means the 10 cities. And these cities were predominantly Gentile, and archaeologists have found remains of a Roman settlement and harbor here, which is widely believed to be where this encounter happened. Mark goes into more detail in this account than any of the other Gospels. He goes into detail of the suffering of this demoniac man and that he was going through. Mark paints a picture here of someone who is suffering a great deal and has also affected all who are around in that area. As we see in verse 4, that he was often bound by chains and shackles, but nothing could hold him, and neither could anyone tame him. The type of language that Mark uses here is the same that would be used towards a feral, wild animal. And this would be dangerous to all who traveled by. No matter how much anyone tried to restrain him, or control him, it was impossible for them to do so. This man had a violent storm raging inside, which was calmed by the voice of Jesus, just as the storm was calmed by the voice of Jesus as they were crossing over the Sea of Galilee. From the Jewish perspective, this account is filled with everything that they considered to be unclean. There was a demon-possessed man who was living in a tomb, surrounded by Gentiles who were raising swine in a Gentile country. Yet Jesus came to this area to minister to these people. And just as we have seen Jesus do on many accounts now, he breaches the barrier of the ritual unclean to rescue a soul. Just as he did with the healing of the leper in chapter 1, Jesus reached out, he touched this unclean leper. Just as people would avoid a leper, so too people were avoiding this area around the tomb, for they did not want to be attacked by this demoniac, who was not only a danger to all those around him, but also to himself. Because as we see in verse 5, that he was cutting himself with stones. This is a violent man. He would attack anyone who would come by. He broke chains and he could not be bound. Anyone who would travel through this area, I am sure, would be afraid of him, and likely would avoid that area out of fear. Yet look what happens when Jesus shows up. Jesus is not one who is afraid. Rather, it is the demons who possess this man who respond to Jesus in fear. The Greek word used here for falling on his knees is proskynon, which denotes to being prostrate, to falling on one's face before another to show reverence or worship. The demons that normally would strike fear into men were now subdued and filled with fear, just being in the very presence of Jesus. Not only is there this physical act of falling prostrate on the ground before Jesus, look at what they say. "What have I to do with you, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I implore you by God that you do not torment me." In his outcry is the admittance to his subservience to Jesus. These demons knew that their time was at hand, and they were begging Jesus not to torment them. And the interesting thing in this statement isn't so much their plea, but their outcry that Jesus is the Son of the Most High God. This is a term that the Israelites would use to describe their God over all other pagan gods, showing that their God was the one true and only God, the Almighty and the Powerful One, the Most High and the Most Holy. So in the midst of a region of pagan Gentiles, a group of demons large enough to possess a herd of swine meet face to face with the Son of the one true God, and they fall prostrate, begging him for mercy. So it's not hard to understand why the people who lived in this surrounding city acted in fear towards Jesus as they did, for they have never come across such power that even this demon-possessed man who terrorized this area, who could not be bound, was subdued and even cleansed by Jesus. And as if that was not enough, all it took was a command for Jesus for the demons to flee into this herd of pigs. The Gentiles were familiar with demonic possession. There have been many manuscripts found of long drawn-out formulas, spells, and conjurations in an attempt to cast out these demons. Yet we see Jesus does so here with only words. And as I've mentioned before, when talking about the miracles that Jesus performed, we notice that many of them are by doing nothing more than just a spoken command. This shows his complete and abject authority over sickness, over the weather, over the roaring sea, and even over demonic powers. I think it is good that we remind ourselves of just who Jesus is and how great is his power and his authority. How often do we doubt, like the disciples, forgetting God's power and authority over all things, even over the minions and over the realm of Satan? Despite their pleading and imploring Jesus to leave them alone, for as they said, "What have we to do with you?" Jesus commands them to leave this man. And it is here that we find that this is not the work of a singular demon, but as we have seen so far in this book of Mark. But this demon calls himself Legion, for he is many. This term Legion is a Latin term, which was used by the Roman military to denote their largest and most powerful group of soldiers. Some argue today that these accounts of the demoniac possession are really nothing more than what can now be scientifically and medically diagnosed as a mental disorder, a split personality which can be treated through modern medicine. And while that may seem to fit some cases that we have recorded accounts of demonic possession here, this does not match this account. Jesus here is not talking to the possessed man, but rather he is talking to the demons who are possessing him. And they identify themselves as being a large amount, to which we see later is about 2,000 of them. Which brings us to an interesting little application of this account. And thinking on this, the loss of 2,000 pigs would be a very large economic loss for these farmers. There is no record here as to the economic damages that this caused the local region, but it more than likely would have a pretty significant impact. The good deed that Jesus did for this one man by casting out these demons resulted in a great financial loss and misfortune for many people. The loss of these pigs would not only directly affect these pig farmers, but the food supply and the other markets tied to them. Yet we see that Jesus puts this value of this one single soul higher than that of these 2,000 pigs, and higher than the physical loss to these farmers or anyone else in this area that it would affect. So once again, this begs the question, how much is a single soul worth? Can we put a price tag on it? What is considered an acceptable sacrifice in the ministering of the word? Jesus considered this one man of more value than 2,000 pigs, which I can only imagine would have been an absolute fortune in those days. So once again, just as I said a few weeks back, we as churches need to stop seeing the mission field as a business, weighing investment versus results, like we were sitting on a board of directors in God's kingdom. The salvation of this single soul is priceless. It is an eternal treasure that cannot be measured and cannot be weighed in our finite values. I don't think that this is an issue that we have here, but if you talk to many missionaries, they will tell you that this is something that they face constantly in their attempt to find financial support so that they can then focus on the ministry at hand and not on their own needs. So I challenge anyone who may be on a missionary board to, instead of trying to ascertain value of their missionary support, they should instead be praising God for any lost soul who has been saved and rejoice in the part that God has had them play in this salvation. So moving on here to verses 14 through 17, we see the reaction of those who are watching over this herd of pigs, and subsequently the reaction of those in the surrounding cities and the villages to this report. So those who had fed the swine, and they told it in the city and in the country, and they went out to see what it was that had happened. Then they came to Jesus and saw the one who had been demon-possessed and had the legion, sitting and clothed and in his right mind. Then they were afraid. And those who saw it told them how it happened to them, how it happened to him who had been demon-possessed, and about the swine, and they began to plead with him to depart their region. What we see here with this healing of the demon-possessed man is a perfect picture of salvation. Every single person has a storm raging inside them, being full of doubt, anger, fear, and pride. When left to our own devices, we seek to find solace in the pleasures of this world. We seek to escape from this ever-gnawing depression of our eternal state. But just like how Jesus brought peace to this demon-possessed and tormented violent man, so too does he bring peace to our hearts and our minds, calming the storm of doubt and fear. This demoniac has now been restored, and he is sitting here, clothed, quiet and calm, at the feet of the one who saved him. Notice how this account ends here. It ends with the people in the region being afraid of Jesus. When confronted by the almighty power and the authority of God, it strikes fear. We even see that with the disciples in the calming of the storm. They had witnessed healings, they had witnessed exorcisms, and they have been following Jesus for some time now. But after Jesus calmed the storm and rebuked it, as we see in Mark chapter 4, verse 41, it says, "They feared exceedingly and said to another, 'Who can this be that even the wind and the sea obey him?'" The disciples were now even more afraid of Jesus than when they were of perishing in the storm. And here we see the locals in the region are now even more afraid of Jesus than they ever were of this demon-possessed man that ran wild in the area. As we go through Mark and read about these miracles that Jesus performed in front of thousands of witnesses, we keep seeing that many people are amazed, many people are fearful, but we do not see many repent and believe. It is the same here with the healing of the demoniac. They witnessed a great miracle, yet they did not come kneeling at the feet of Jesus in reverence, but rather they reacted in fear, and they wanted to have nothing to do with him. Today there's an idea that people say that if they would believe if they could just only see. If they witnessed a miracle, then they would believe that God exists, or that Jesus is the Messiah. Yet the entire New Testament is full of such miracles, and crowds who have witnessed them, but yet never believe. And lastly here, verses 18 through 20, Jesus and his disciples leave to head back to the other side of the sea. And when he got into the boat, he who had been demon-possessed begged him that he might be with him. However, Jesus did not permit him, but said to him, go home to your friends and tell them what great things the Lord has done for you and how he has had compassion on you. And he departed and began to proclaim in Decapolis all that Jesus had done for him, and all marveled. This man wanted to go with Jesus and his disciples, but Jesus had another plan for him. This now saved, unclean, demon-possessed Gentile has become the first missionary to the Gentile people. They may have banished Jesus from their land, but they did not get rid of his message. And we see that the message of Jesus is received by these Gentiles in the same way that it was received by the Jews. And verse 20 here ends saying that they all marveled. I think in many ways we are all like this demoniac. Some may be more than others, but when Christ comes, the turmoil and doubt and the fear subsides, and we are left with peace, grace, and love. And our mission is the same, to go to our family, to go to our friends in the city, and tell them what great things that the Lord has done for us. Our salvation and our changed lives stand as a witness to God's grace and authority, just as it did with this demoniac. Let us close. Father, as we come to you this morning after reading this account here in Mark of the casting out of the demons of this demoniac, we are reminded of your great and awesome power that you have over all things. We see the accounts of the healings and of the calming of the storm and over the demons, Lord, your power over the physical body, the nature itself, and even over the spiritual realm and over Satan and his demons. We stand in awe at this power and the mercy that you show towards us in calling us to be your children and to follow you. Lord, help us to have the strength and the mercy upon us as we witness your word and the grace that you have given us to those that we come in contact with. And in Jesus' name, amen.